Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is NRL Boom Rookies.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Boom Rookies presented by ESPN. I am Matt Bungard, and with me today, Nick Campton. Hello.
Hey, everyone.
Mate, what's the view like?
Well, up here at the top of the table, the air is thin and the balls fly high.
The Canberra Trash Goblins have done it again. They have pulled yet another rugby league team down into the gutter with them and grossed them out until they said no more. No more of this. A 28-12 win for Canberra, which also took my beloved Rabbitohs off the bottom of the table. So I'll call that a complete success for this show.
The Raiders simply went goblin mode. Mm. And if your team can't do that, then I feel sorry for you.
Yeah, mate. I thought that Newcastle, there were shades of last year at Newcastle just getting frustrated with the way Canberra handled anything that they tried to do, compounding that with a lot of really poor errors, or a lot of really basic errors as well. But unlike last year, they didn't have the magic to turn it around. They kind of just accepted that this wasn't their night. And I think that that was music to Canberra's ears, especially in that second half. It just felt like every time the Knights tried to get anything going, Canberra would slow the game down. They'd sniff it out and Newcastle would get frustrated and go back to the drawing board. And the end result is a pretty comfortable win for a team who you yourself would probably admit didn't exactly look like they were particularly cohesive in attack, but scored 28 points.
That's just how you do it, man. I like how Canberra learned from the game last year. I think the big lesson that they took away from that game was don't bite people. Mm. You know, there was not a single biting incident in this game. You know, like that's a really big step forward. You know, but like I was really happy with this. Really, really happy with it. It was a really satisfying win because, like, you know, I know Canberra's attack was bad. A lot of people were saying, you know, how they weren't able to put anything together. But you can always get better at that. You know, your structures can always improve. Your attack can always get better. Guys can always get sharper. Guys can learn to play better together and learn to connect more and all that sort of stuff. But winning games in the early part of the season, a lot of the time is about toughness and about ticker and about sort of gutsing it out when it's really, really hard. And I think that's what Canberra did, you know.
Mm.
There were, through the first maybe 60-odd minutes, there were times when the Knights were on top and Canberra were able to hang in there really well. And when Canberra on top, they were able to really sort of make the most of it. I think there's a really telling passage just after halftime. So that they get the try through Danny Levi, which God bless you, Danny. He's copping a lot of heat from Raiders fans over the summer. Like, we have someone on our Patreon whose name is Danny Levi's biggest hater.
Mm.
You know, but like I'm not one of those people who ever wants a Raiders player not to succeed so they get out of the team. You know, I think that's actually a bit crook. Like, if they're out there, I want them to do well. And he did, so like, good on him. But anyway, after the try that he scored, there was a period of like sort of where the two teams were going set for set. The Knights got down Canberra's end via a penalty, got a six again on the last tackle. And so it's pretty much two sets back to back. Canberra were able to hold them out. I think two sets later, we had the great bit of play where Fogarty puts a booming kick downfield. Tom Starling like lifts up.
What a chase.
Greg the leg Marju, and then Papali'i comes in and they drive him back into the end goal. When that happened, I started barking like a dog. I was so fired up. And like Canberra didn't score immediately after that, but it flipped field position. And the next
they get the Xavier Savage try in the corner with some really nice work from your man Bertie Hopps and Hudson Young to throw that pass without even thinking.
Absolutely. And it was a try that they sort of earned through their defense at the other end and through making that great kick chase when they had every right to be really fatigued, you know. And to be honest with you, after that happened, I was that to me kind of not like it wasn't the end of the game, but after that I was like, well, Canberra now are physically right on top of this, and you could I think the Knights after that you could see their heads drop a little bit, like they weren't up for the fight as much in that final 25 minutes after that.
You get dozens of moments in games every week, things like what Starling and Papali'i did on that kick chase, and quite often they lead to nothing, but it's just so satisfying for you as a fan when a big effort play like that does lead to points, and they did score a couple of minutes after that. And Newcastle never really got going in this one. I think that like basically from the start, like they looked really good in that first set. I remember like of the game, like Greg Marju takes a hit up in the middle and then like literally a play later, he's on the end of a spread. They go within a meter of scoring. And you think that, oh, this is the free-flowing Knights of last year. They're going to throw the ball around. Caelan Ponga's going to pop up wherever he might. Like Hastings and Gamble will get involved. And Gamble was like very well involved for that Frizzell try. But by and large, I thought that neither Knights half really did enough to take the load off Ponga. I thought neither of them really engaged the line enough. I don't think either of them really offered any point of difference enough until right at the very end where Hastings takes the line on for possibly the first time in the game and just scores a try. And you think if they'd just been a little bit more direct to large portions of this game, it might have ended up differently. But Canberra did such a masterful job. I think my first note from the game was ruck fuckery almost immediately. I think it was the second tackle of the game where I was like, they should be penalising these pricks, but they're not going to. And I've come to a realisation, Nick. I've come to a realisation with the Canberra Raiders, because obviously I've got you and everyone on the Durs court and a bunch of other Raiders fans. I want you all to be happy because you're all nice people. And I think the best way for me to do that is just to treat the Canberra Raiders as though they're a wrestling heel. They're constantly just getting away with shit. Viva la raza forever. Like, if I just watch Raiders games, except against South, and just, like, wait for Hudson Young to hit someone with a chair while the referee's back is turned or something like that, which he pretty much did to Caelan Ponga. If I just treat Raiders games like that, I think I'm going to be a lot happier going forward. And I did that in this game, and I had a great time.
once you grow to accept the truly perverse brand of rugby league that they play, it is a whole lot of fun. You know, like I know that some of the unorthodox tries they've scored in the past have had you tearing your hair out.
They nearly had two in this game.
Once you're on the right side of them, it's pretty terrific. You know?
Yeah.
I think it's a good point you make about the Knights halves. I think they were kind of the big issue. In this one, I thought they both played way too sideways. They weren't digging into the line enough, and it wasn't giving Ponga the space that they kind of needed to get stuff going. Like in the first maybe 25 minutes, every time they went down their right side and went at Albert Hopewadi, who had a bit of a tough game defensively, they looked really, really good. I thought Dane Gagai in particular looked really, really dangerous. But sort of after that opening 25, they found it difficult to set things up for that really nice back line that they've got. I tend to think it's a case of too many cooks spoiling the broth. I think having Gamble and Hastings and Cogger out there, I think as players, they're all a little bit too similar. There's a tendency to overreact wildly to round one games because we're so starved for footy after the long summer. So there was a lot of takes last night, like, oh, you know, Cogger's got to start and Hastings has got to go, or Gamble's got to get shot into the sun, or this. It's like, We don't have to overreact, but I do think that you can't play them all together. Yep. You know, I don't think that really works. So if you stick with Hastings and Gamble, then that's great. But then I wouldn't want Cogger coming off the bench and playing anywhere other than like maybe a little bit of dummy half. I don't want him out there like as a lock forward, or I don't want Crossland dropping back to lock either. Like I think they need to sort of simplify their approach a little bit.
Absolutely, mate. Completely agree. And I don't think it helped either that Phoenix Crossland, who I've been a big fan of for a while, who was really good for them last year, had a very tough night. You ran through a list of the things that happened that he was involved in. He had the knock on just as they got the six again, which, by the way, I hate that rule. The bell was literally still ringing for a six again as he dropped the ball. And they're just like, well, tough shit. You lose possession. And then like a set later, he kicks it out in the full from dummy half, and then second half really poor in the lead up to the Danny Levi try and just never really got it going. And I hope that he can rediscover some of that form from 2023. But overall, I think you're exactly right, mate. There's too many like-minded guys in that spine at the moment. And then, yeah, what were they doing when they kind of just had them all on running around together? I didn't like it at all. And it's weird to say that Kurt Mann gave them a kind of point of difference, but he kind of did a little bit.
Well, I think they needed more from Adam Elliott in that sense. He can be really effective.
He had one or two good carries, straight, going not to enough.
The
line
and then passing out the back. That year he was with Canberra, he was really good at it in the second half of the year. And he was really good at it in the second half of the year for the Knights last season. And, like, a lot of their good attacking structure came off the back of that. And I just didn't think he was quite able to show it. And because they were all going so sideways, it made it really easy for Canberra to handle. They just kept working hard from the inside, kept pushing across, and eventually the Knights would run out of room. You know?
Yeah.
I thought Kai Pierce-Paul was pretty good when he came on. I thought there was it's very clear that he's got something about him. You know, like, and he's offloading at will and he's big and rangy and all that sort of stuff. I thought it was a really promising debut from him. But yeah, Adam O'Brien was pretty scathing of the Knights after the game, where he sort of said that they didn't show the toughness or the grit that he wanted and there wasn't the willingness to play that way that he was really, really after. And, you know, like, I know they had the great 10 match winning streak last year, but a lot of those performances were sort of run and gun. You know, maybe this is a team that still needs to discover that that harder edge, you know?
And if you're one of, you know, you can have all the fancy stats in the world, but if one team completes at 60% and the other one completes at 90% and really defends hard and defends physically and takes their chances, there's only going to be one outcome in that game. And that's what we saw here. And for Canberra, I just think it's a fantastic result. They were very gutsy in the middle of that second half. We have, of course, that massive swing in the game where Kalen Ponga makes that break. It is a clear, but it's an unfortunate penalty, but it is a clear obstruction penalty.
Yep.
But they lose Hudson Young in the process with that cheap shot. And then, but as your fans so often say, it only makes us stronger when you take us down to 12 men, because it's a 12-point swing as a result of that obstruction penalty. And I think that just kind of was endemic of the entire contest, where the Raiders just took advantage of everything that was given to them and the Knights couldn't get out of their own way. Quite literally.
Take what you can and give nothing back. Did you see Jamie Sauer talking about that penalty?
Well, it was very reminiscent of
He said, that's been a penalty for 15 years. Thanks, Bulldogs fans.
Yeah, how do I know that? Because mine was the first one to ever get called and then they destroyed the stadium. Down goes the general.
You want to hear more about that? Please go and listen to our Boom Rewind on the 09 Bulldogs that we did over the summer. It was a great time. But that first try for the Raiders, which came almost, I think it was the set after that, that was Jamal Fogarty connecting with Zach Hosking, and I think they were Canberra's two best players on the night. Fogarty, the first 20, his kicking game.
20, 30 minutes, his radar wasn't there. Like that first kick where he kicked it long and Ponga, but it was still good at alleviating the pressure because your forward pack wasn't getting anything going.
First 20, his kicking game probably wasn't there, but then after that, it just
added on a string. He was
really
great.
Got going, you know? Absolutely. And like, there were a couple of games where he did this last year where he was legitimately kicking teams to death in that great Raiders win over Brisbane last year. He out-kicked Adam Reynolds, which is really hard to do. He led the league for try assists off kicks last year. It's a serious, serious weapon. He's got one of the when he's at his best, it's one of the best kicking games in the league, you know. And there were so many times when he was able to flip field position or put in a really good attacking kick. Like he's gotten really adept at just putting the ball in an uncomfortable spot for the defense to field. You know what I mean? Making the change of possession as difficult as possible. And if you do that and you chase hard and you throw yourself around, you're going to get results.
Yep.
You know, you're going to get results. They got one on the Savage try. They got one on the Hoskins try. There was the Savage no try.
Two different no tries.
And the Solo no try in the first half, where it's the same thing. If you just keep doing that, you'll get it more times.
Maybe you score the most bullshit tries because you just put the ball in bullshit spots the most. Maybe it is that simple.
It honestly is. Like if you put the ball in uncomfortable positions and you chase down like fucking maniacs and you throw knees and elbows around and you make it as uncomfortable as possible for the other team, they're going to make mistakes. You know? I really want to wrap Hoskins. I thought he was terrific down the right side. Like did a lot of really, really good defending. So Canberra have got a lot out of their back rowers over the years, but a lot of the time it's players like Hudson Young and Elliot Whitehead who aren't exactly, you know, the Boyd Cordner types where they run really good lines and all of that. You know, like they pass and they offload and they kick and they can do strange things and it's great. But it was nice to have a back rower who was just super straight up and down, meat and potatoes, lunch pail, 9 to 5, on the tools, that sort of stuff, you know. And I thought Hoskins was really, really strong in that regard. Morgan Smithies at lock. I wasn't really sure what to expect from him this season, because I was a little bit worried that he wouldn't quite have the impact as a runner to make it in the NRL. Like, I always knew he'd be a good defender. He holds the Super League record for most tackles in a match. But I wasn't sure if he'd be able to offer enough with ball in hand, but I think he did. There are a couple of timing things with his passing that he'll work out the more he plays here, but he's a good one. It's clear he's got a lot of ticker. It's clear he works really, really hard. He's super tough. He just sort of adds a lot to this Canberra middle that's already got a fair bit going for it. And like, front middle forwards are at a premium right now. Like, there's like three or four clubs that are crying out for some, and Canberra already had plenty, and now they've just added another one. It's like they've really strengthened a strength there. So
yeah,
that's turned out really well for them.
Doing a quickly wrap, Jordan Rapana as well. Right at the end of that game, the Knights get that one try, and you think, oh, gee, maybe there's like an outside chance they come back into this game. The next set, the Knights are rolling down the field. He flies out of line and blasts Tyson Frizzell, ends the game. Great play.
He's the best. I love him so much. So he's 34 or 35 years old now. Like, of all the active players in the league, he's the longest serving. He's the only player left from the 2008 season, right? In rugby league terms, he's incredibly old. And you could tell that because he was cramping up with about 25 minutes to go. This is his first game.
Onto the wing you go, Jordan.
This is his first game of the season, and he didn't play a trial at all. And he doesn't really want to play fullback because he doesn't think he has the legs anymore. But he's doing it because Ricky asked him to do it. That's why he ended up on the wing for the try he scored, right? Because
it's park footy shit. I love it. Yeah, hide him out on the wing. He can't move.
And like, you awesome. Can see when Canberra were defending the line, he was limping around. He couldn't really run. And he couldn't really run when the Knights were on that next attacking set. But he raced up and just threw himself into Tyson Frizzell regardless. Like, God damn it. I just love that dude. I absolutely love him. I know other fans of other teams loathe him. They're probably right to do so. He does a lot of questionable shit sometimes. I do not care. The wholeheartedness with which he plays is just unbelievable. And at his age, throwing himself around like that, just as good as it gets.
Try! Try! This is a try! Brilliant! Brilliant play! I think it's a try! Oh, I don't know if this is going to be a try!
Gee, what about this bloke?
The long-awaited return of What About This Bloke. How good. So this was our weekly segment that was shelved for the finals, replaced with Sawyer Brain. But every week during the regular season, we will take a trip down memory lane and talk about a rugby league player from yesteryear, usually the late 90s, early to mid-2000s, because that's our sweet spot, suggested by a patron, Nick.
Sitting around and naming old footy players is the finest thing a person can do. And one of the finest blokes I know, beloved patron of the show, Matty McP, has come up with a doozy. So like Bert said, the late 90s, early 2000s, that's generally our sweet spot for this. But Matty's gone a bit more recent. Matty's gone 2015. He only played the one game. But Luke Page is his selection.
The White Kummel.
The White Kummel. Great stuff. So Luke Page, a front rower. Again, only the one first grade game. It was for St. George Illawarra back in 2015, but his career is so much more than that. A Queensland Cup mainstay, a cult hero of certain corners of the rugby league internet. And he is a cult hero for one reason and one reason only. Every single time he ran the ball, it was dead straight as hard as he could. Fantastic stuff. It's a Friday afternoon when you're listening to this. It's a TGIF kind of day. Pull up YouTube, type in Luke Page, and just treat yourself, man. Like, remember how Martin Lang used to do it? That's how Luke Page is doing it all the time.
Yeah. I just remember he was one of those guys that was supposed to be like the next big thing for so long that every year on like forums and Twitter and stuff with the Dragons, it'd be like, especially in those couple of years, was like, oh, Luke Page is one of these guys that's going to make a leap this year. It never really worked out for him. But yeah, a guy that you can put that Queensland Cup highlight reel on and have a great time with. And then, of course, he has the second act with his international career.
Yeah. So, as you would expect from a guy named the White Kummel, you know, Luke Page is white as the driven snow. But his grandfather and father were both PNG citizens. His grandfather owned a firearm business up there. So as a result, Page was able to play for Papua New Guinea. And, you know, it's a bit of a trip whenever you see a white fella running around for the Kumuls, but he embraced it in a typically wholehearted manner, played 11 tests for him over 4 years, including some of their finest hours, you know, played some great footy for him in the 2017 World Cup when they made it through to the quarterfinals, and played for him in 2019 when they beat Great Britain in Port Moresby. I think that was his last test for him. Mm. And there were a couple of runs that he had there where he rattled the shit out of James Graham, which is no mean feat whatsoever. You know, like for a guy who only played the one first grade game, it's a very decorated career, you know, one for the purists, Luke Page.
Yeah, the Mounties RLFC video, 1 minute of Luke Page, is at time of recording up to 347,000 views.
Only like 340,000 of those.
I was going to ask how many of those are yours. But yeah, it is exactly what Nick said it is on the tin. It's just a big man running it straight.
Yeah, exactly. And like we can dress this game up. We can talk about how, you know, like attacking patterns and digging into the line and kicking and set structure and all that, but sometimes all you need is that pure uncut there's running into stuff.
There's a kick return at the minute mark of this video where he sends two Manly forwards flying like bowling pins. It is unbelievable. It's like Paliocena levels.
that's actually not a bad comp. He's probably not as athletic as Paliocena. Someone tell the Yanks about Luke Page,
mate. If you showed them 1 minute of Luke Page, that's all you needed. Just blare that on billboards across the strip.
He probably could have played a little bit more first grade than he did. Like, he was Queensland Cup Player of the Year a couple of times, but I think he sort of made the choice that he'd rather play Q Cup and live a bit more of a normal life than, you know, then go all in on a first grade career that might not have gone all that far. But he played a lot of State Cup. He retired back in 2021. He was a burly stalwart. You got to love it, man. Guys like Luke Page, they keep the lights on in rugby league.
Love a stalwart as well.
Oh, is it better to be a stalwart or a warhorse?
I think stalwart to me implies loyalty over a long period of time. Warhorse, I think, could go to various places. Stalwart was just always there.
You know what a stalwart becomes once he retires?
A good rugby league man.
A good rugby league man. Good rugby league man, Luke Page.
Luke Page, we salute you. His last Instagram update was him and his missus going to see Taylor Swift in Melbourne. So sounds like he's doing well.
Imagine him clearing out the Swifties in the paint. your friendship bracelets won't save you now. Here's the man runs without fear.
Here's some 12-year-old girl that saved up all your pocket money to go see Taylor Swift, and this giant man is in front of you and you can't see shit. Terrific.
The white Kumul has shown you the way.
Yeah, and if any Swifty wants to run it straight, I would watch that.
Do you think Luke Page could take down the world's most dangerous Swifty? Is he himself the world's most dangerous Swifty?
He definitely is. And I would... How many... So if you just took the average person that would be in like the standing up area of a Taylor Swift concert, how many of them would it take to stop Luke Page coming off the back fence?
Okay, the important caveat here is, has Taylor told them to do it?
Good point. Luke Page is trying to storm the stage to sing the Burley theme song instead of letting Taylor Swift finish her concert. How many of them does it take to stop?
Okay, so Taylor points at him and says,
"Get him,
you know, let's fucking get into him."
So basically, how many 12-year-old girls could Luke Page take a hit up and send flying? It's at least 20.
Well, I'll tell you what, if Jake Paul can fight Mike Tyson at Cowboys Stadium, we can fill the MCG for this. So Golden Boy Promotions or No Limit, give us a call.
Get in touch. It's so funny because you see all those, like in Japan and stuff, where it's like three pro footballers playing against like soccer against like 100 school kids, and it's great. Yeah. It's never a contact sport one. let's get some of the big boys playing against like 110 year olds.
Every time I watch a contact sport, I go, you know what this needs? More violence against children.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, anyway, Luke Page, geez, he could run.
One of the greats. Great selection from Matty McP. If you would like to be featured on What About This Bloke, you have to sign up to our Patreon.
You can still be in the Coltrane Cup before Sunday.
Sorry, we should have mentioned that at the top of the show. Sign up for the Coltrane Cup. This is the last week you can do it. If you don't get your pick in round one, it's incredibly hard to catch up. for next week's What About This Bloke, taking a trip to merry old England, because dear beloved patron of the show, Bruce the Pom, has been chosen. So we might get a little bit of Super League import action. We might get some real sicko shit. And he says like some center or winger from the Celtic Crusaders or something like that. I'm very excited for what that direction this could take. But Bruce the Pom, your time is up, my son. You have been chosen.
All right, Brucey. I look forward to seeing what you got. And let's move on to preview this weekend's games. 6 p.m. at Go Media Stadium. God, it's an awful name. The Wires begin their 2024 campaign against the Cronulla Sutherland Sharks. Two finals teams from last year. Two teams that will be hoping that they can sort of elevate it to that next step this year. I'm very keen for this one.
Yeah, this is a beauty. This is a beauty.
What a treat to start the weekend off.
Two extremely settled teams. So they both know what they're about. I don't think there'll be much of a feeling out process for either of these sides. They know what they want to do. They know how they want to do it. It's not reasonable to expect them to hit the ground running at round one at peak capacity, but I think this could be match of the round type areas, which is saying a bit given what we've got coming up later on Friday night. And I think these are two teams at pretty similar levels. You know, like I have them both in my top eight. I think they both should have some pretty big ambitions for this season. I do give the Warriors a slight edge just because I think their middles are a little bit more formidable. But then you could probably say that the Sharks might have a bit more fluency in their back line. But I think because it's at home, that gives the Warriors a major edge. They sold this game out yesterday.
Awesome.
The Warriors have sold out their next home game, which is in 2 weeks' time already.
Wow.
There is a real vibe around the Warriors over there right now. There is a lot of expectation after last year. There's a lot of intensity. There's a lot of spirit though as well. And, you know, rising to the pressure like that hasn't always been a strength of the Warriors. But I think in these early season games where it can come down a little bit to sort of emotion and toughness and sort of grinding it out, I think having a big rowdy home crowd like that is a really, really big advantage.
Yep, super keen for Tane Tuipige, a guy that Brado highlighted on our Warriors preview as one to watch for this year, for the second year in a row, I believe. But it's heartening to see that that's kind of how much they're backing Roger Chance Duka Klukstad in the fact that when he's out of the team, they're still keeping Roger in the centers because they know that long-term, that's going to be Roger's position. I think that is a really good sort of confidence boost for Chance from the sidelines, knowing that kind of like they're like, yeah, we've got this guy back. He's arguably the greatest ever Warrior. We're backing you, Chance. We're backing you to be our fullback this year. And I think that's awesome. I think that's a really good move by Andrew Webster.
I do too. And I think it's smart for Tuivasa-Sheck as well, because he is learning a new position. He hasn't played a whole lot of center in rugby league before. So he does have to like sort of learn the ropes. And the longer it takes for him to get to the centers, the longer it'll take for him to learn the centers. So I agree with you. I that was unexpected, but welcome.
Are we banning Adam Fanua Blake from Front Row Friday this year?
No, dude, he's a front rower. He's part of the club. You can pick him if you want.
I look forward to hearing you pick him in like an hour's time. Absolute coward. Interesting with Toby Rudolph on the bench for the Sharks. They've given the nod to the Oregon Trail and Royce Hunt. No Hamlin Uele. And yeah, that could be a big out for them. But overall, I think the Warriors forward pack just has a little bit more bite to them in this one.
Well, I think what the Sharks are going to look to do is just overwhelm the Warriors in the middle with numbers, because they've gone four props on the bench, which is very unusual in this day and age. And I don't think any of the guys in the middle for them have played anywhere else except for Cam McInnes, who plays a bit of hooker sometimes. Like, I think they're really going to try and push through the middle with as much sort of power and tempo as they can. Dale Finucane on the bench is interesting to me. I wouldn't have him.
I reckon he's played a game at second row at some point.
Oh, he has, but he is, you know.
Yeah. And he's
the veteran of 1,000 battles at this
and
point.
It's fair to say he's not at his sort of most dynamic that he's ever been in his career.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that McInnes is also probably not that much of an impact player and you want him out there for plenty, but I would have thought that starting Finucane and sort of getting the most out of him in those rugged early exchanges would be the best way to use him. But, you know, they've opted to go another way. So I think that's what the game will come down to. Can the Sharks overwhelm the Warriors in the middle with numbers? Or are the Warriors just going to be able to hold fast and set stuff up for SJ and Metcalf. I don't know. Yeah, I'm going the Warriors, but yep. It's honestly, it's only because they're at home. That to me is the major factor here.
Yep, I'm going to tip them as well. As much as it pains me, if this game was at Shark Park, I'd take Cronulla. If Hamlin Uelo was playing, I might take Cronulla. But I just think that I know they've gone heavy. I know they've gone big boys on the bench, but I just think that, like, no matter how many big boys they throw at Tohu Harris, Mitch Barnett, and Adam Fanua Blake, it might not be enough to win that battle.
You mentioned Fanua Blake. Where does scoring a try against your future club rate in, like,
because this is not a thing, right? Because this isn't a thing. Like, you know, how in soccer they don't celebrate against their old club when they score. Yeah. This isn't a thing in any other sport because no other sport allows people to sign for a team a year in advance and then play against them. But, like, I see remember Angus Crichton scoring for us against the Roosters before he went there, and he celebrated like any other try. So I think it'll be fine. I think if Fanua Blake scores, he'll be hooting and hollering.
I think he does seem like a hooting and hollering type of guy. You know,
yeah. It's a dumb rule. Get rid of it though. Yeah. All right. And then a rematch of the 2020 Grand Final, the main game on Friday. But man, what a doubleheader! Round one double. They're throwing heat in round one with this
brother,
doubleheader.
Brother, are they? What? This is two games of the good stuff.
Storm hosting Panthers, the three-time premiers. The last team to beat them in a grand final was, of course, a Melbourne Storm team. A Melbourne Storm team that looks fairly different than it did 4 years ago, but a Melbourne Storm team that nonetheless will always have premiership aspirations and title aspirations, and it starts here in week one against a Panthers team still rattled from the World Club Challenge, I'm sure.
They're having cherry and white nightmares every night, bro.
Yep. The big out, of course, and enough to, I think, comprehensively swing this the other way is no Cam Munster, of course, for the Storm, who I think is still their best player. Wasn't necessarily their most consistent guy on that spine last year. I think you were right in the preview. I think it was Jerome Hughes. But to me, Munster is their best big game player. And to not have him in a game like this, especially in a round one game where he would have been chomping at the bit just to get out there and grub it up against Jerome Luai, I was really looking forward to that. It's a damn shame he's not playing. Jonah Pezzett, a fine replacement, a very solid player and a guy that I think has a huge future ahead of him at this level. But just a damn shame that Munster's not out there for this one.
I'm sure you guys all would have heard at this point about the Melbourne Storm under Craig Bellamy in round one stat. We'll run through it again just in case you haven't. They have never lost a round one game
under
Craig Bellamy. Dating all the way back to his first game as coach in 2003, where they were down 22-0 against the Sharks. They came back and won. I love that stat because I think it tells you so much about the Melbourne Storm. Like, they always come into a season well-prepared. They always come into a season really fit. They're not the sort of team that takes a couple of weeks to find their feet. They know what they're about from the jump. But I do think this is the week the streak comes to an end. If Cameron Munster was playing and if Nelson Asofa Solomona was playing, then I would probably feel differently. But I think now Penrith are the ones who come in here with a totally settled and a totally secure idea of what they do and how they play and how they're going to do it. You know, like, there is stuff to like about this Storm side. Joe Chan getting a run, incredibly exciting for you and me. He's like the official mascot of the show and he only got the one
Joey
game
fucking Chan
last year. But yeah, Joey fucking Chen. Did you have
If you haven't seen, sorry, Nick, I don't remember. If you haven't seen Rounders, pause this show now and go and watch it.
When was the last time you watched Rounders?
Probably about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I watched it last week.
You can't lose what you don't put in the middle, but you can't win much either.
Stones.
Words to live by. So we should stop before we quit the whole
thing. We should. Actually, you know what? We're just going to play Rounders in its entirety, and that'll be the rest of the show.
And introducing John Turturro. Anyway, yeah, no Mitch Kenny for Penrith, but I think that Sonny Luke, a late inclusion on the bench with no Tyrone Peachy as well. Luke Summerton only got a little bit of a chance last year. I think he had a kind of tough debut in that 20-minute stretch against South. They really targeted him defensively, and it will be interesting to see how he handles sort of probably the toughest away trip you can get in rugby league with a trip to the Storm. And as you said, not just the Storm, but the Storm in round one. But he's got enough good players around him and enough solid, and he's had a solid preseason. I'm sure that if Ivan Cleary believes in Luke Summerton, then I believe in Luke Summerton. It's that simple.
Well, I think the Panthers have a real advantage in the forwards here, and that would be different if the Asofa Solomona was here, but he's not. He's the sort of person that can turn the tide a little bit, but he can't do it because he's not playing, you know? And while I think the Storm have taken steps to alleviate some of the issues that they had last year, particularly their athleticism in the middle of the field, it's still a big ask to go up against the Panthers, you know, who have not found a forward pack over the last three seasons that they haven't been able to bring to heel when it counts, you know. And while there's always going to be a couple of teething problems at the start of the season, I think because the Panthers, their fundamentals are going to be so strong, the defense is always going to be good. The forward pack's always going to be good. Nathan Cleary's kick game is pretty much always going to be good. I think they're going to be able to sort of grind Melbourne down a little bit. And I think because Melbourne are going to spend most of this game playing off the back foot, I think that will not negate Harry Grant, because you can't ever totally negate him, but it'll sort of limit the influence he's able to have on the match. And I think for Melbourne to win this, they kind of needed to be pretty much not at peak capacity, but sort of at peak strength. They needed Munster to have one of his games, you know, or they needed a Sofa Solomona to have one of his games. And, you know, it's Pappenhausen's first like proper game back from injury. It's probably the hardest task in first grade that he's had since that knee injury against the Raiders. You know, I'm certain Penrith are going to target him. I'm certain they're going to go after him. Mm. You know, so as much as I love that Melbourne Storm round one stat, I think it does come to an end here. I think Penrith get it done.
How many times do you think within a minute of full time are we going to see that Undertaker streak West Romania graphic post by various people?
Well, it's going to be right up there. Which streak to you is more impressive?
Well, one of them's fixed, Nicholas. So obviously the Undertaker.
Oh, the Storm fixed games. Is that what you're telling me?
I did it first. I said obviously the Undertaker. God damn it. We're in the same frame of mind. But I mean, yeah, I'm not in love with the Storm forward pack. I think anything to monster them through the middle. And that's the end of that chapter. I think the streak is over and Penrith win.
Yep, I'm with you.
Yep. All right. Saturday, 5:30 p.m. Of course, we only have the 6 games this weekend. So at 3 p.m., you get to find something else to do with your time. What are you going to do? Talk to your loved ones? Go for a walk? I don't know. It's not my problem. You have to figure that out. But you won't be watching first grade rugby league because there isn't a game on.
It's none of our business what you get up to with your proclivities.
Yeah, yeah. Keep it out of here. But at 5:30, you can come back and we can watch the Eels play the Bulldogs. How's that sound?
That not great. It definitely sounds like an activity that will kill a couple of hours on the inevitable march to death that we're all undertaking right now.
And that was the Eagles Bulldogs preview. Rugby league, baby.
Oh, look, I was quite struck seeing the Dogs 1-17, how poor that forward pack really looks.
You know, when you sign 9 utilities and don't sign any forwards, this is what happens.
It's a strange one. I know that you're not wild about Stephen Crichton at fullback, but I think the fact that they're not even really going to try it is pretty intriguing to me. I would have thought that, like, at least give it a couple of weeks, like, as a shot at the stumps. I don't think Blake Toff exactly shone in the trials. Like, I think you could say that he, in the second one particularly, he almost played poorly enough to lose the jersey, even if he had one hand on it. And this is a Bulldogs team that is still very much trying to find their way and figure stuff out. And, like, I don't think they're anything close to what their best 17 will be at some point in the season. And you compare that to Parramatta, and, like, I feel like we really know what we're going to get from them. You know, like, all the major players are here. I'm really confident they're all going to play the same way. The two Parramatta middles on the bench, Ryan Madison and Joe Offengaway, I think they're better than every middle that the Bulldogs have got. Well, you know, like, you're talking about a depth there that Canterbury are really going to struggle to match. And I think Parramatta are going to do this one pretty easily, which is why.
Here's Taylor rolling the ball end on end. He's after it. He might have got it down. Oh, he thinks he did. Oh!
Coltrane Cup.
It's important with the Coltrane Cup in round one. You don't want to overthink it, but you don't want to underthink it either. You want to think it at just the right level. And that's the level I'm at with Parramatta, Canterbury. I think Canterbury are going to struggle. I think Parra got the goods, and I've seen this play out before. This is not like last year where a bunch of people took the Roosters against the Dolphins, even though the Dolphins were a total goddamn wild card and we had no idea what we had. You know, these are two known commodities, and in the CTC early in the season, that's what you want.
Here's Taylor rolling the ball end on end. He's after it. He might have got it down.
Train car.
second train has hit Combank Stadium. Well, it took it took us a long time to pick the same game last year. I feel like we were at least halfway through the season when we did it, and yet we're doing it here in round one. I think it's a really tough round. I don't think any games massively jump off the page, but I'm the same as you, mate. I think Penrith is a safe bet, but I'm not wasting a Penrith tip in Melbourne. Are you kidding me? Forget about it. But I'm the same as you, mate. I took a look at this forward pack, and I look at guys, the quality of players the Eels have on the bench, and then you look on the other side. Hosa Faumasili was a guy that, even with the Dolphins' depth issues last year, struggled to make it into that team, even at a point where we were like, they've got no guys left, and he's starting for them. And that, to me, is concerning. I think their depth in the forwards is just absolutely not good enough. And I feel like Parramatta are better than most teams at putting bad teams to the sword when they really feel like. And I think that given that they finished last season on a pretty positive note after what was overall a tough season, they'll be looking to go out there and prove a point today. And I think that today, on Saturday. And I think they'll be able to do it without too much difficulty. So I'm Coltraning them as well. It is funny because, you know, the Storm, I picked the Storm, like this competition has existed in various names for almost a decade now. And I pretty confidently that I picked, until last year with the Roosters Dolphins debacle, I'm pretty sure I picked the Storm in round one every year just because it was like, yep, easy, pick it, get off to a good start. Can't do that this time because I don't think they're going to win. I do think Parramatta win. I do think they win easily. And I do think that if the Bulldogs win, there is going to be some early carnage in the Coltrane Cup because I have no doubt that a lot of listeners are following us to this blue and gold pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
This blue and gold pot of gold.
I should have said this blue pot of gold. It was right there.
I just don't think the metaphor lands for you.
That's fine. It's not important. What is important is that they win because we've Coltrane them.
100%. I really want to see Sean Lane have a big game. He had a tough year last year with injuries and all that, and he's spoken very emotionally about some of the mental health battles that he had during that time, which was very, very vulnerable and a very, very good thing to see, to someone comfortable speaking about that. So I'd love to see him get some good time on the field, sort of get that form that he showed in 2022 back, because I think he is a bit of a confidence player. And when he's feeling himself, then all the good stuff can happen. And he's throwing flick passes and hitting holes and playing like an extremely large 5'8". Like, I always love those sorts of dudes. So sort of hoping this can be the start of like a real bounce back for him. I think it'd be really good to see.
Yeah. Remember when Bulldogs fans were saying Toby Sexton was like their halfback for the next decade because he had a good game against the Souths backups. That's fun. Not on the team.
He's not. I'm surprised that Connor Tracy's not.
I am also surprised at that. The whole point of him moving to the Bulldogs was that he'd play everywhere.
Yeah, and like, even if you want to keep Stephen Crichton in the centres, is Connor Tracy a better fullback than Blake Toff?
I don't know. Did Connor Tracy play fullback in the grand final?
No, but are we going to do the Blake Toff, Jackson Paul, I think, every week? Like,
no, I mean, we might at this point. Blake Toff keeps playing fullback in first grade, we're going to have to. So,
tough times, brother.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm surprised. I thought the whole point of Stephen Crichton going there was that they were going to let him play fullback.
I don't know. I'm not quite sure what they're going for over at Belmore.
Maybe do a late switcheroo. Who knows? Cameron Soraldo's got some tricks up his sleeve. I don't care. Oh, speaking of things I don't care about, the Titans hosting the Dragons. How are we going from Friday to this?
If you get the good Friday, then you get sometimes
that's
you have to.
That is how
Saturday.
It works. That is
but
how
that's,
it works.
That's what you want to hear in round one. I don't care about this. That's
I'll
the,
still watch it.
That's
like,
the
I'll,
spirit, baby.
I don't care. Like, and the thing is, like, these games can just randomly be great. Like, you can have two bad teams put on a show. I think the Titans are going to put on a show in this one, though. I think the Dragons are just not at all at the races. And again, like more chat this week. Like, I'm saying Zach Lomax isn't pleased. He's been shifted out to the wing. I don't think it's a terrible move, to be quite honest with you. I think that a lot of their problems last year came from him, who I think is a very talented player, overplaying his hand, turning the ball over too much in good positions. And he can still be the sort of dynamic game-breaking player that he's capable of being on the wing. And I think that perhaps that might also be Jack Bird's best position too. So interesting to see them roll the dice with that move in round one. I'm excited to see how it turns out.
I don't like it for either of them. I think Jack Bird is a forward at this point. I think I would have him either at second row or at lock, but I think it's pretty clear he doesn't want to play there. Yeah. I can take your point about Lomax overplaying his hand. That is a thing he does sometimes, but the Lomax to Ravalawa combination down the right was one of the only things that worked for the Dragons last year.
That's true.
Ravalawa went almost at a try a game clip over a 20-game period. That's really, really good, especially for a team that dip was really struggling to score points. I understand what they're doing here, right? Flanagan and Jack Bird obviously have a relationship from their Sharks days, where Bird played a lot of great footy for Flano in the centres, right? I can get why they want to get that going. And I get why they want to move Lomax to the wing either. I don't actually think it's about them reckoning that Lomax can be good on the wing, because I don't think he can. I actually don't think the position really suits him at all. I don't think he's like a bulky enough runner to give you the push from the backfield that you really need. I think the whole idea was to challenge him, was to put him in an uncomfortable position and see how he responded. Because I don't think it's a secret that, you know, Zach Lomax's attitude over the last couple of seasons probably hasn't always been what it could be. And I think the idea was put him on the wing, take him out of the centers, put him somewhere where he doesn't want to play, and one or two things will happen. Either he'll really knuckle down, he'll think, I'll show you, you prick, and really try and make a fist of it, respond to it, like to the challenge in a really positive way, or he'll kick stones and start saying, I want to leave, and start trying to engineer an exit. And either way, you get a result you can build on. Either you get a fit and fired up Zach Lomax playing well, either on the wing or in a move back to the centers, or you have this guy who's on a lot of money who is going to leave the club and give you a little bit of cap space. I tend to think that he isn't going to be at Saints beyond this year. And I think there's no shortage of clubs that would see his talent and think, we could use a guy like that to bolster our outside backs. I think Parramatta would be a really nice fit for him. I think the Roosters would be sniffing around. They've been sniffing around Zach Lomax for a really long time. I get the strategy that the Dragons are going for there. But it's, I am a big believer in his talent, even if his attitude hasn't always been there, you know, and that combination with Ravalawa has been so strong. So I don't know. I think everything that the Dragons are doing this year is less about the results on the field and more about the sort of roster moves that they can engineer through the season, right? And this is the start of that.
Yeah, so it's almost like how in Japan you can't fire anyone, so they bully you into quitting. You think that's what Flano's doing to Zach Lomax?
Is that what they do in Japan?
Yeah, they have really strong labor laws. You can't fire people. So, like, they basically try to, like, if they want to get rid of people, they try to, like, they give them, like, shit jobs and try to bully them into quitting and stuff. It's really interesting. Then some employees really dig in and just, like, go into this office and sit in an empty room for 8 hours a day.
They can stand through it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great to see.
I know.
Great
it's awesome. That's the classics.
The fascinating thing that I've heard about salary men in Japan is there's a culture of wanting to appear like you're working incredibly hard. So a lot of them, well, not a lot of them, but some of them will sleep in the office overnight so people will think they're working hard.
Yeah. Again, this is very close to Costanza, leaving broken down car, and then he's the first one in, last one out. The lunch power guy.
I don't want to make it sound like Flanagan's trying to force Lomax out.
No, we're just mucking around.
Yeah, I know, but I think that was the whole idea, you know, a bit of a challenge in there.
Prove me wrong.
It's hard to find things to be excited about with the Dragons side, but there is a fair bit that I like for the Titans. I'm really keen to see Beaufort get back in there. He's been a favorite of mine for a really long time. Missed all of last season with a knee injury, but really, really fast for a back row, really mobile, great at hitting holes. We'll give him a lot of strike on that edge. Chris Randall getting the hooking job over Sam Verrills. So that's definitely a surprise, but I love Chris Iyer, want him to do well. And Keanu Kinney at fullback. I only saw a little bit of him last year because I think the games he got to play were on when I was away. But if he's good enough to get the fullback spot with Jaden Campbell injured and have AJ Brimson stay in the centres, then that's a pretty fair wrap. So I'm excited to see how he goes.
Oh, can we just sign JoJo Fifita, please? Just sitting there, doing nothing, not playing. Really good backline, though. I think it speaks to their depth, is that guys like him aren't playing. But that's been the thing with the Titans for like last year. It was like, yeah, we liked their backline, we liked their forwards, and you liked Tanner Boyd. And
why have I been recast as some Tanner Boyd lover?
Nick Tanton. There's something there. I don't know. It's yeah, I think that they've got all the ingredients on paper, and now with a proven coach like Des Hasler, they can put it all together, and I think it will start this week, and I'd like them to win this one pretty handily. Not cold training the Titans in round one. I'm not a lunatic, but I will say, honestly, that Dragon starting forward pack is not that bad when I look at it on paper, but it's just, it kind of falls off at that point.
It's okay. It's solid. But solid's about the best that they can hope for, you know? So you got to take the turns in this one, don't you?
Can't wait till later this year when Ben Hunt's playing for the Titans. It's going to be great. Sunday, one game. Nick, one game.
It's not very round one of them at all, is it?
No, it's not. But at least it's a fun game.
It is a fun game. It is a good
Dolphins, one. Cowboys. It's a damn shame for the Dolphins, of course, Tom Gilbert going out in the preseason, a guy that we were huge fans of in the first half of last year and both agreed that his downfall was a big catalyst for why they started tumbling down the ladder in that second half of the season. A huge loss here. They get Ray Stone back in. He'll always work hard. He'll never let you down. The interesting thing for me, mate, is as you predicted in the preseason, Zach Katoa not in the team.
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting moves at the Dolphins. So Isaiah Katoa's on the extended bench. They've gone Cody Nikorima at 5'8", and they've gone Tessie New in the centers over Jake Avarillo. Avarillo is a player that I thought was gonna get in the team for sure because I thought very athletic, super fast, very dangerous on a bad Bulldogs team last year. I thought he'd get the Wayne Bennett shine and walk into the centers. But Tessie New seems to be a player that Wayne Bennett can't seem to quit, you know, and maybe he's had a big offseason. Maybe Avarillo underwhelmed a little bit in training up there, but it is a bit of a curious move. I understand the Katoa one a little bit more because I think with a young half, it's always better to be patient if you can afford to, you know? Mm. So I have no doubt that he will finish the season in the halves in one of those spots. But Nikorima is an old pro at this point, like will create points for you just about every week. Was better last year than I thought he could be in a variety of different positions as well. So maybe that's what they're looking for there. But yeah, those two moves did surprise me.
Yeah, that first game these two teams played last year was really fun. That was that Good Friday game. Super fun game came down to why. The second time they played, Dolphins were kind of running on fumes at that point, but they did get the win in that first game last year. It comes down to the forwards once again. And I do think that just without Tom Gilbert, it's going to be a little bit too hard for them. I love Mark Nichols, but a bench of Kerr, Plath, K-Brom and Mark Nichols isn't really, I don't think, giving them that much of a boost off the bench in terms of impact either. And then the Cowboys can unleash Griffin Neame at some point as well to come in and sort of wreak havoc along with that starting forward pack, just full of dudes who are game wreckers. And that is going to be a tough thing to overcome for the Dolphins, but not tough enough that I think this game is going to be a blow. I think this is going to be a really tight game.
I do too. I think the Dolphins will be able to hang in there, but I'm kind of with you. I'm leaning the Cowboys. I want to see the Cowboys do their stuff from the start this year. Mm. This is it. Like everybody on that team has, except for Zach Labatt, has been a part of this team for quite some time now. There should not be a feeling out process. They should know how they want to play. They should know what they want to do. They should know how they want to do it. So let's do it from the start. You know, let's show that 2022 wasn't a fluke and that 2023 was. Let's really hit the ground running, you know? So that's what I would, if I was coaching the Cowboys, that's kind of what I would be after. I do like Zach Labor getting that start in the centers. I think down the track, he'll probably end up being a back rower because he's a really big lad. He's got a big frame on him, but he's a robust runner of the ball. And while I was an enormous fan of Peter Hicku, like he did sort of go off the boil last year. And I like the idea of the Cowboys having like a real strike on both edges. And they've got it on their left edge with sort of a power runner in Lukey. And then, you know, Val Holmes being Val Holmes and doing all the Val Holmes stuff. And then on the other side, you've got Jeremiah Nanae and Zach Labor, and you've got Nanae is a bit more of like the sort of the silky runner, and Labor is a little bit more of the power guy. I think that's a really nice mix. I think it gives them a lot of really good balance. Scotty Drinkwater is going to do some gunslinging. I'll talk about a sayings we have back on the ranch. I'm expecting the Cowboys to get this one done. The Dolphins will make it work for it, but I want to see the Cowboys be the Cowboys that I think they can be from the jump.
They're a really interesting team this year. I think they are one of the teams that we're the most keen to see if they can get back to what we know they are capable of being with the guys they've got on paper. And at the moment, I think they can do that in this game and get off to a flyer in round one, and I'll take them as well.
I will too. I'm really excited to see Connolly Lemuelu out there. Had a really good year last year, sort of as on spot duty for Felice Kaufusi and Kenny Bromwich when they were injured, or in Felice's case, suspended, because that does happen to him a lot. But it's pretty clear, I think, now that Kenny Bromwich is on the bench, that Lemuelu is that's his spot now. And I know there's always a lot of talk about Kealum Lukey and about him maybe entering origin calculations. He's sort of been on the brink of being on the brink for a while now. But I actually think Lemuelu could end up playing for Queensland this year. I think he's the sort of mobile, hard-running, hard-charging, knee-swinging, jet-flying, wheel-and-dealing back rower that can have a real, real impact week to week. And his background in the outside backs gives him a great mobility as well. He had a big season last year. I'm expecting an even bigger one this season.
Yeah, absolutely agree, mate. Love you planting your flag with an origin also in round one. Love to see it.
You got to do it sometimes. I did it last year with Corey Horsburgh in like round three, and look how that turned out.
Yeah, absolutely.
We did
mate.
It. We made it. Absolutely. Me and cousin Corey made it all the way.
Simi Renrandra trying the chip and chase. Oh, no, it's Simi Renrandra. Renrandra's away. Simi Renrandra.
Oh, this will be interesting.
Oh, yes, it will, yes.
Simi Renrandra.
Oh, he's absolutely buried it. Renrandra.
One bit of news. It would be remiss if we didn't talk about it, but Spencer Lienu has, after a few days of harrowing discourse online, pled guilty to the charge of directing a racial slur towards Ezra Mann.
Yeah, look, it's a good thing that he's accepting some responsibility. It's a good thing that he wants to apologize. I think the seriousness of what he said didn't really sink in for him until after the match. I think that's the reason he was so flippant about it when he spoke to Brent Reed on the field. But to that end, I think the line in the press release where Spencer Lienu says, "I said it, but I didn't mean it in a racial way," I don't think that's good enough. I think he is a switched on enough guy that he should be able to understand that. I am often very forgiving of things that happen on the field. I think a lot of the time, you know, this is an aggressive game we play, and lines get crossed and all that. And if someone hits someone in the face, then I can find that really easy to forgive. This is different though. This is absolutely crossed a line. And even though he's tried to get in front of it by admitting to it and not fighting the charge, I think the NRL has to come down incredibly hard. I think they have to show that this sort of thing is not acceptable in any way, shape, or form. I would be pushing for a suspension of like 12 weeks or something like that. I don't think admitting guilt should save him for this one.
No, I completely agree. It's a damn shame that what was a great weekend was marred by that. But thankfully, after however many days of people being in his ear and trying to explain the situation to him, he has shown a level of remorse, which is good. Now, hopefully we can move forward. And I agree with you. I think they can't really pussyfoot around with this one. I think they've got to really put their foot down and just be like, a healthy band has come. I mean, you compare it to what's the only comparable instance, right? It's the Marcelo Montoya thing where
even that's not comparable, I don't think, because this is dehumanizing in a way that we can never really understand that.
No, no, I'm just saying the last time a guy was banned for like saying something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I agree with you. Like, this was worse because there was no remorse shown and the way it dragged on and stuff. So, and I believe Marcelo got 6 weeks, which was then pled down to 4 or something like that. So I would be imagining, ballpark somewhere between 8 to 12 weeks for this one.
Yeah,
we'll see.
I think so. The detail in this that has really stuck with me was Ezra Mann crying in the sheds afterwards.
Yeah, not great.
You know, like, just horrible shit. And the amount of stuff that he's copped on social media in the week, in the days afterwards, has been absolutely disgusting. Like, that is stomach churning shit, you know. And it's a lot of people who could never understand how this feels telling him how to feel about it, you know, just horrible stuff.
Yeah, really shit for him. I hope I know he's got some good people around. The Broncos are clearly a club that's very together at the moment, so hopefully they're all getting around him and he's feeling okay. But yeah,
hope so.
Very shit situation. Let's hope that Lienu can learn from this and that we can all move forward. So yeah, no place for it, of course. Before we get out of here, I'll give a quick thank you to the people in the top two tiers on our Patreon subscribers. If you'd like to support us, go patreon.com/NRL Rookies. You'll get a third show every week, merch discounts, entry into the Coltrane Cup. Again, gotta do it this weekend if you want to play. Access to our Discord, plenty more. So thank you to Chris Avnell, Dave, Michael, my favorite utilities are water, electricity, internet, and the Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs. Murray, Rocky and Rafi, Stu, weak-gutted Wayno, Adam Small, AJ, no can dunk, but good fundamentals. Ashley and Martin, Broncos legend Adam Reynolds, Bruce the Pom, Butsy, Carlingford line, Coltrane Tipper, Chewbacca Snuffleupagus, Dan Cullinane, David, an anonymous backer, Ed Burton, future Clive Churchill medalist, Keon Kalamatungi, I was saying Boo Owens, Jason Joe, Joel Wrigley, John, Josh Brandon, kicks us out of the comp, Lachlan Hancock, Luke Charles Midnight, Mads, Taylor's version, Manly are no longer team of the pod. They are, I'm sorry. Matthew Duggan, Mr. Beefy, Morgan Watkins, my name is Nick Campton, and rugby union is my favorite type of rugby. My ding ding dong is hard and I'm sad. Never trendy. Nick Kotrick lives on my street and suburbanly coaching him to run it straight. Paul Mac 78, Reese Brown, Roxanne Clark, Ian Vegas, Shunter, sometimes even the great Rodrigo Eduardo, because to change his name. Stupid white bastard. T2T, give me the fucking ball. Tanking your Coltrane Cup with cowardly picks is the finest thing a person could do. In fact, the black vegetable, the Raiders trick plays are what most teams call a block shape. Thor, Tom Hardy, Woz, and Westlife Podcast, West Tigers are back, baby. Thank you so much for your support. To everyone in the lower tiers and to everyone who just listens, thank you as well.
Some great names in there.
I was, they're in mid-season form already.
They really are. They've hit the ground running. When I was watching the Raiders last night, I was texting a few of my mates, and I was like, why don't they ever spread it? Why don't they ever spread it? And I was like, because they are allowed one backline spread each week, and they're just building up to it. And then they did it on the Rabada try. So
and was that
they're one for one?
Was that pass forward? Who gives a shit? Not me. Not me. Anyway, you can enjoy the next at least few hours and possibly the whole weekend on being the head of the table. So congratulations on that again.
The head of the table, just like my hero Roman Reigns.
Exactly. We acknowledge. You can't see, but we're acknowledging it. So that's good. Grayson Waller would be proud. All right. Say goodbye, Nick.
Goodbye, Bertrand.
That's goodbye from me.